The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. It is my joy to have a guy that has been on my program a couple of times already, and his name is John Morgan, Mr. Presidential Impersonator. That's who you are, John. Everyone knows you, and we have to do that obligatory, not the attorney, not the lawyer, because people, they think of that name. It's a popular name in Orlando for now another reason, because of you. So welcome to my show.
Well, it's great to be here.
That's it. I never know what John Morgan I'm going to get, whether it's going to be W, as just we've heard, or whether it's going to be President Trump, because in that sense, you do him a lot now, too.
That's absolutely fantastic, and it's excellent of you, Mike, to point that out, because the American people know that if you've got strong, strong leadership, okay, then you're not going to have a wimp in the White House, okay? We don't want a wimp in the White House, okay?
You're getting that one down too, John. That's really funny. And what's so great about it, I am today actually in the same room with John. And so we're being careful, obviously, with this whole coronavirus, social distancing and all of that. But, you know, to see your face as you go through your different characters, it kind of is an all-body experience for you to turn yourself into George W. Bush, or in this case, Donald Trump. When you're out doing this, I know it's been a while since you've been able to do that, because like most every business that has meetings, professional entertainers like yourself, you've been furloughed for a little while, and we're hoping that that time ends and you get out and you're mixing it up with the crowds again. My goodness, I can't wait for that. But when you're there, are you aware of, let's say, the whole image of, do you try to imagine what other people are seeing as well as what they're hearing?
Well, I find out that the people's wheels begin to turn because they realize they're in the presence of greatness. But the thing of it is, it's not even true. It's not President Trump isn't there.
Right.
President Bush isn't there. But there's some weird psychological thing that takes place that makes people feel as though he is, or he is.
Well, I know that you're also at times dealing with the reality that some people, when they first see you, they actually think you are George Bush. Maybe more so that than Donald Trump, because you naturally look like George Bush. So there's got to be that reality that when you're doing this and you're seeing people with their mouths gaping open, that's got to have some sort of impact on you.
What has been the most fun so far is when I'm impersonating Donald Trump and people go, oh, this is funny, it's a Trump impersonator. And then I throw off the wig and become George Bush. They go, oh my goodness, that's George W. Bush. He was impersonating Donald Trump. And you know, I actually did have an event 2 days ago in Ormond Beach at a restaurant. So that was my
first. Oh, you have already started.
Yes, my first public outing. And I thought perhaps I had lost my touch, because I didn't get a really good response from the audience. And then afterwards, I found out that the average age was 83.
Okay.
So they didn't feel they had to laugh. And half of them were scared anyway, because it was their first time out of the house and they just didn't know what to expect and they were nervous and, you know. And
what was the event? What was it?
It was a seniors event for a magazine called Our Seniors. And they pulled everybody together. They have a monthly outing for everybody, and they've had to cancel the previous several. So this was their first time to be out of the house, so to speak. And it was wonderful to be with them. I did feel like the performance was not being very well received, because they weren't responding. But you know how there's that crowd dynamic when everybody's just sitting right next to each other? Everybody had to be distanced, and it was awkward and weird in the room anyway. So there was some kind of sense of, this isn't normal. So I think that affected the comedy. But everybody came up afterwards and they wanted pictures. And they're, oh, that was so much fun. Thank you so much.
You know, I mean, that group would have been aware. I'm sure most of them are, like you said, maybe a little bit anticipating, fearfully, maybe a little hesitant to really enjoy the evening because it is their first time out. And that group would have been in what has been described as one of the most at-risk groups in the country. Country, being in that age group over, like you said, a good number of them in the 80s. So my goodness, then that's an amazing first gig out for you. And I'm just rather surprised that they actually kept that one on the calendar right now.
I'm very glad that they did. And it was fun because I love a challenge. And this was unique because of the setting. And it turned out great. It was almost like an adventure because as I was performing, I was feeling like these jokes aren't going over like they normally do.
Right.
And then to get the feedback from people one-on-one with glowing eyes and all, you know, all excited. Oh, it was just so wonderful. So it turned out they weren't responding in the moment because that normal dynamic of people being next to each other and enjoying comedy was not present. So that's a clue to what it might be like for entertainers going forward unless things get back to normal in a typical, you know, audience setting.
Everybody's using this term new normal. And I think that's a right way of saying it because nobody knows exactly if we're going to get back to the old normal. So the thought would be we want the new normal to be as much like the old as possible. And yet, I just don't know. I heard a guy yesterday make a statement, and he said, we'll probably never get back to the old normal. And that really made me sad when I heard that. This was a person that is pretty, I would say, in touch and aware and someone in a business that knows what he's talking about. And I'm praying that as much as possible is not true, that we can get back, especially for believers who enjoy fellowship and going to a church service. I pray that we do get back. Let me ask you a question. As an entertainer, John, when you look back at your life and you think about, you've had those moments, like you said, where you wonder how everything is going over. What would you say would be your number one Southwest moment? Borrowing from that commercial where you wish you were somewhere else at that moment. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, well, absolutely. And it was quite a public moment as well. In fact, I've had a few of those. My mind is remembering the time when I was performing as a young singer-songwriter to a group of middle schoolers at a Valentine's Day event, and I was singing a song, Come Fly With Me. And in the middle of the song, I do the kind of a funky chicken thing, and it was in that moment that everyone in the room but me realized that my fly was down.
Oh, yeah.
So that is for sure a moment.
Yes,
I could live without.
And how ironic that the title of the song. My goodness.
Come fly with me.
Oh, yes, man, yes. John. And what about as President Bush? What, any moments that were you think of like that was,
oh,
crazy?
There was, yes, there was another one that I'm sure none of your listeners would want to have been in this situation. And it was, I was auditioning to be George W. Bush on America's Got Talent in Dallas, Texas, mm-hmm. as George W. Bush. Now, this is right after his presidency, and he was a new resident of Dallas and the hometown hero. And so unannounced, my audition came, and I walked out on the stage in front of a packed crowd, and there's the celebrity judges all there, and the audience went crazy. They sprung to their feet. They were cheering and clapping and slapping babies. I mean, it was, you know, for all the world, they thought George Bush dropped in, mm-hmm. for all I could tell. Either they thought that I was really George W., or they loaned me, a performer, their genuine affection for George W. Bush. And in that moment, the world was my oyster. However, I blew it. It was mine to lose, and I blew it. Because instead of staying in the moment, enjoying this connection with the audience, I worried about how much time I had to perform. And I thought, this audience is eating up all my time. It was the exact 180 degree wrong thing to think. Because really what was happening was I was winning just by standing there. All I needed to do was say, it's good to be home, you know, something like that. And just keep the love going. Instead, I just started performing my prepared routine, and it didn't match the moment. And you know what? It broke the connection, the love connection I had with the audience. And instead of cheering, they started jeering.
Wow.
And instead of clapping, they started booing.
Oh, no.
And they were booing as vehemently as they were clapping and cheering. And the judges had to hit their buzzers to keep the people from starting to throw shoes and tomatoes. And so I got basically booed off the stage.
Oh.
And that was a horrible, horrible moment. However, I learned a lesson from it that I've carried to this day. And that is I went back to the hotel room later that night and I felt just awful. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, John, what did you learn? So I got a pen and wrote down two things. Number one, it's about your audience. Love your audience. And he, you know, in my mind, played that all the way out to my wife, my children, my customers, my vendors, my boss, my audience. And the second one, it's just as important. Always bring your A game.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that always bring your A game play over in my mind probably 1,000 times as I'm preparing for an event and something in me, something in my human nature wants to take a shortcut, wants to do something to just get by. And that always bring your A game plays for me and reminds me, you know, you're going to do it. Do your best. Mm-hmm. You're going to be there. Give your all. And it's transformed my life and my ministry.
Those two things, I mean, the first one really does speak to the issue of humility. When you're putting other people and their needs and where they are ahead of your own, that really weighs into the success of that moment. And then the second one, like you said, my dad taught me something years ago when I was a boy. He said, just do your best. There are so many times I can hear him saying that. Just do the best that you can do. And I think all of us have this desire, and that's probably what was going on in you, you know, to excel, but maybe to knock them dead. And you were already knocking them dead. I've seen you when you had that moment, and you did just utter like, I forget the exact expression that you shared in Gaithersburg, Maryland, at an event that we were both there, and you laughed, you said like one little thing and the audience went crazy. That's got to be a weird feeling for you.
It's a delightful feeling. Because well, you know my history. I'm definitely a glutton for the approval of men, and that's my flesh. And God has had to teach me to play to an audience of one and to love the Lord and his praise more than the praise of men. And I think that's one of the reasons why he took me out of the spotlight for so many years as a singer-songwriter in those early days. I was so naive and so just plain stupid that I remember one time our pastor, Danny, said, John, you have a lot of charisma, but not much character. and you know what I said to him? Thanks.
Oh,
because I thought he was paying me a compliment. Oh.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess, in the moment. But
No. I mean, it just showed that I had an awful lot to learn.
Oh, my goodness. If you've just tuned in, my guest is John Morgan. He is a presidential impersonator. I remember the story that you told the first time you were on the show, that it was your wife, actually, that woke you up one night. And tell that story about how that she was the first of the two of you that had faith for you doing this as a living.
Okay, well, let me begin the story at the end. I recently finished writing, well, it's been 3 years now, my most current book, War on Fear. And the reason I wrote the book, Mike, is because I was a prisoner of fear, a POF, someone whose every decision was weighed through the filter of what is going to cause me to be rejected the least? What is going to cause me to fail the least? The things I feared were my paradigm. And so having written the book, I'm so glad to be able to tell you now that I've been set free in large part from a lot of the things that caused me to turn this down at first. When someone first said, John, you know, everybody says how much you look like George W. Bush. And by the way, if your listeners would like to put a face with the name, if they're not driving their car right now, they could go to johncmorgan.com or georgebushimpersonator.com. And there you'll see and you'll think, wait, why does he have a picture of George Bush? But it's actually me.
It is you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So somebody suggested that I become a George Bush impersonator, and I turned him down flat because of my fear of rejection, because my fear of failure, because my fear of being called a lunatic. And but a few months after that, my wife saw an artist named Steve Bridges, who is also a George Bush impersonator, but who performed with a prosthetic mask on. He actually looks nothing like George Bush, on The Tonight Show. And she got so excited, she went and looked him up on the computer. And when she found out how much money he made for an appearance, she came in the room all excited and grabbed me by the scruff of my pajamas, woke me up and said, I just found your new career. You're going to become a George Bush impersonator. And I'm like, what, what? And, you know, and I was scared to death of the possibility until the moment the Lord spoke to me and told me, yes, he wanted me to become a George Bush impersonator. Nothing had changed in what I feared, but something changed in who I trust. Because I know God, and I know that he's for me and not against me, and I know that he would never do anything to harm me. I said, if you want me to do it, God, I'm in.
Now, every performer who begins to do something brand new like what you were doing has that first moment, that first gig where you've taken now this idea that's come and maybe presented with strength like Kathy did when she told that to you, and you've thought about it, maybe you had encouragement from other people, but you have not yet done this. So there is that very first gig. Do you remember what it was like?
I do.
Well, tell us that story.
Well, the very first one was at my sister's Christmas party for her law firm. I know I have a sister, Marianne Morgan, who's an attorney here in Orlando, too. very good attorney there in Winter Park. If you need an attorney, her firm is called Morgan Law. And she and I together are also Morgan and Morgan.
Yes.
But anyway, that's an aside. It was for the Sunburst Celebrity Lookalikes Convention in Orlando. You know how God is a tapestry artist, and he sets up circumstances for us in order to allow us to succeed and walk into his will. Well, it just so happened that right after I decided to become a George Bush impersonator, like moments after, I got on the phone with a lady who is the very center of the lookalike industry in Las Vegas. And she said, well, you're pretty fortunate because you live in Orlando and Greg Thompson is a celebrity lookalike agent. Mm-hmm. And he's about to put together a huge conference right there in Orlando. And I thought, what are the odds? What's the timing? You know? So I got Greg on the phone and I was right there at the first organizational meeting to the Celebrity Sun Lookalike Convention that's now in its 12th year, I believe. So my very first appearance was at that convention, and I'd been studying my scripts. I mean, I'd been walking around just reading my script. And but the good news about being a presidential impersonator is you can actually have your script in front of you on the podium because the president reads his speech.
Yeah.
So when the time came and I walked through the audience to the strains of Hail to the Chief and people were having fun with it. This was in George Bush's third year of his first term. So, I mean, his presidency was still very hot, very happening. I hit the stage, whipped my speech out of my pocket, unfolded it in front of the podium, went to say my first word, and I looked down at my script and it was on page 3. So I went, wait a minute. And I grabbed a page and I grabbed another page. Well, the audience just started laughing. They thought it was part of the routine.
Of course.
It played perfectly into
George
Bush
goodness.
And the goofball. So I had to completely, you know, restructure my stuff. But what was so fun about it, even though I was turning red and totally embarrassed, Greg was in the back of the room just laughing because he saw that it was still playing just fine. Yeah. And I got the thing put back in order and did my speech, and it went over great. People loved it. And I was on my way.
First one, it's a grand slam. You got to love it when that happens.
In spite of being two strikes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, sometimes I can think back to comedians that I've loved and seeing them, maybe how they respond to something that didn't go the way they thought it would go is often more funny than what they would have done if it had gone just the way they wanted it to go. So your ability to play in the moment, yeah, kind of bounce off of these things that happen, it really might be one of the shining advantages that John C. Morgan has in his life. So grateful that you're here, and we're going to hear more from John C. Morgan, the presidential impersonator, coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Got somebody in the studio with me today, John C. Morgan, presidential impersonator. And John, there was one of my favorite stories that you told me years ago. You're in Nashville, and I believe it was for GMA Week, right?
That's correct.
And was that the first time you'd ever been up there for that event?
Yes. You know, I mentioned in the last session or segment that God is a tapestry builder. And, you know, he sequentially will do one thing, and then that had to happen for this next thing to happen, and the stepping stones are all there. And if you'd miss that one appointment, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got invited to perform for a record company's quarterly review. They didn't have any new projects, so they wanted to do something to make a splash at the meeting of their parent company.
Mm-hmm.
So they hired me to come and perform for them, but they basically tried to nickel and dime me, you know. And so I told him, well, that's below my minimum. And they said, well, how can we talk you into it? And so I said, well, is there anybody at the company that would sit down and have a mentorship session with me? Because I was new in the industry. I didn't really know what I was doing. And these guys are in the show business, Christian music. Maybe they could offer some pointers that might help my career move forward. And as it turned out, the man that met with me from that record company was Vince Wilcox, who later became my manager and actually co-wrote my first book with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so glad that conversation went the way it did, because during that, what was meant to be a 1 hour meeting, after about 3 hours, he said, John, I'm afraid I'm going to have to go. This has been so much fun, but I've got to go. I'm going on a cruise next week, and I've got to go home and get ready. And I said, are you going on the Christian Music Boat Cruise? And he goes, yes, how did you know? And I said, I want to go on that cruise. It turned out that Stephen Mansfield, who wrote the book, The Faith of George W. Bush, was going to be a guest on that cruise. And I had been trying to figure out a way to get on that cruise. So I said, Vince, who do you know that's behind the cruise? Can you pull some strings for me? And well, he got me on the cruise. Let's put it that way. So we're on the cruise. On that cruise, I met Lynn McCain, who lives in Nashville and became my publicist. Lynn McCain, every year at GMA, holds an event she calls a guitar pull. And what it is that they've get all these world-class guitarists in a room together in a suite, hotel suite, and they have people from guitar magazines, and everyone is there. It's all about guitars. And she goes, I would love to have you come and sing that fishy song that you do. And because I had performed it on the ship, on the cruise. So
the Selfishy song.
The Selfishy song, yes, which mm-hmm. maybe I'll play later since I brought it up.
Yes, I think you're going to have to now.
And so I said, well, who all is going to be in the room? And she named some people I was unaware of. But then she said a name that I was very aware of, Phil Kagi.
Yeah.
I have every one of his albums, and I am the world's biggest Phil Kagi fan.
And you and I, together with our wives, went down in South Orlando someplace years ago and saw him at a very small venue. It was amazing.
Yes, yes. And do you know the reason that that venue, I think you may have even invited me to it. I don't know how I got there, but at the end of that venue, I got audacious And I went up and talked to Phil, and I asked him, I've written this song, and I'd love to know if you would be willing to play on it for me.
I did not remember that.
and he said, well, sure, John, I'd love to. And I'm like, really? And so I spent the day, in fact, I've spent several days now, in Phil Kagi's studio in his home, recording, and he's now recorded on two of my songs.
Mm.
And I mean, just to be in that room where so many of these hits and songs that I dearly love, and to see all of his guitars, just like I'm in this studio now looking at all your guitars, this was a magical moment. So I had not met him yet, and she invited me to go to this guitar pull. And I thought, if Phil Kagi's going to be in the room, I'm not singing the Fishy song. I've got to play something that has a little bit of chops to it, you know? So I wound up writing the Red, White, and Blues song that I did. And so I wrote that because I wanted to have something that was at least decent, you know? And so I had two Secret Service agents. The moment came, they're having their guitar pull. We knock on the door, the two Secret Service agents walk in the room. And then I walk in the room dressed like George W. Bush. Everybody freaks out. It's so much fun.
Did they know you were coming as
no,
Bush?
No, no. She wanted to surprise everybody. I was her new artist, you know, as one of her artists. I could have been there for the whole thing, but she wanted to use the moment to entertain everyone, which I did. And then I said, you know, y'all all know I'm a painter. Well, no, that was before he was a painter. He was still president at the time. I said, I'm learning to paint with the guitar. And I've been taking some guitar lessons, and well, I'd like to sing y'all a song. And then I did my Red, White, and Blues song for everybody, and it was so cool because I actually got Phil Kagi to jam with me. Everybody was holding a guitar. Most of them were holding McPherson guitars,
mm-hmm.
like this one. And Matt McPherson was there in the room.
You didn't know that at the time.
Oh, right? I didn't know who he was. Yeah, I didn't know what these guitars were. And So thank you. So I played the song, and everybody jammed with me, and it was just like I can die now. And then so that meeting was over, and now I was invited to be at the suite during all of GMA week because now I'm one of her artists. And just that alone, it's like, I have an agent. I have a publicist. You know, it's like I'm a real boy, you know. And so I was chatting with Matt McPherson, and in the back of my mind, this little thing, why don't you invite him to loan you a guitar? See, I'd been invited because of that, another step in the progression of events. I'd been invited to play on the Dove Awards, their televised pre-show, the next evening. And so I thought, and my guitar at the time was a nice guitar, but it was a 30-year-old Gurion.
Mm-hmm.
Handmade guitar made in Orlando. And I thought, what if I asked if I could borrow a McPherson? And I thought, well, what's the worst he could say? No, you know? So I just said, hey, Matt, I just had this crazy idea. I said, it's a little audacious of me to ask, but wouldn't it be cool to have the president playing a McPherson guitar tomorrow night on the Dove Awards? And he goes, well, you're right, John, it is audacious. And then he said,
oh,
but
man,
you're also right, it's a good idea. And then he says, here, take mine. And he just hands me the guitar that's in his hand, his own personal, private, handmade McPherson guitar, Matt McPherson. And he says, take it to your room, play it tonight, get used to it, play it on the show, and I'll get it back from you after the show. And I'm like,
man,
wow. So I perform it, and you can YouTube that moment. It's online, and as the standing ovation is ending at the end of the performance, my cell phone begins to ring before the applause even dies out, and I pick up the phone. I'm backstage, and it's Matt McPherson, and he goes, John, Matt here, well done. And I said, thank you, sir. And he goes, John, take that guitar home. And I'm like, what? And he says, take it home, enjoy it. And he says, I'm going to personally oversee the production of a brand new guitar for you, and then we'll swap back when ready.
Now, I knew a lot of the details, but you've told me more about this story than I knew before. That is amazing.
Yes. And about maybe a month and a half later, this guitar showed up at my house. It's been a treasure to me ever since.
Yeah, I guess. Well, play it, if you will. That's awesome. This is John C. Morgan. What's the song you're going to do here?
Well, you know, why don't I... You know, I was going to do my song, Everything, that Phil Keaggy played on. But I'm now feeling Red, White, and Blues.
Okay, do it.
Well, I'm a free world leader. Freedom's rolling out to you. Well, I'm a free world leader now, mama. Freedom's rolling out to you. Well, I'm a good news instigator, compassionate conversator. This freedom is rocking and rolling on out to you. Got me a nuclear buster, protecting freedom, that's what I do. Oh, you know it's true. Got me a daisy cluster, protecting the red, white, and blue. Well, you best not mess with U.S., baby, or U.S. sure will mess with you. Oh, let's hear it for the red, white, and blue. Yeah. Here's my favorite verse. Well, I'm a lore lover. Ooh, that lovely lady stays on my mind. Whoa, she's so fine. Well, I'm a lore lover. Ooh, that lovely lady stays on my mind. That was the president doing the king. Well, I'm so glad I got a love for my own now. Sweet child, there won't be no child left behind. Seems how lately, babe, I got a bad case of red, white, and blues. Whoa, yeah.
That is John C. Morgan, presidential impersonator, and you did that. That was, I think you did that song that night. Isn't that the one you did in Nashville?
Yes, indeed.
And boy, playing it now on a McPherson guitar that God just arranged for you to have, man. That's just awesome. It's a great story, and this man has a ton of those kinds of stories. Talking about John Morgan, he's my guest. We're going to be back with John coming up in just a moment right here on Afternoons with Mike. John Morgan is my guest in the studio today. John, that was an amazing song that you did, and you played on the red, white, and blue with a little bit of a blues feel, and that was awesome. You mentioned the song Selfishy. That song, we were part of a neighborhood outreach in the 80s, for crying out loud, and then it went on into the early 90s as well. But I remember we did this song, and you have done this song since the mid-80s at least. And the song, this is the song that to which you were referring earlier, that the lady wanted you to do the Selfishy song. So tell us,
right. How
did this song come about? Because it's a classic, and it was part of a project that we did called Camp Destiny. There's a long, probably out of production cassette tape floating around by that title, and you're one of the characters. You and I are both characters on that program, on that tape. But this song is all part of the play that we did back then called Camp Destiny. Now, how did this song originally come about?
Well, it's really funny. I was at, do you remember the Fellowship of Contemporary Christian Musicians, Bob Hay?
And yes.
Back in those days, yeah. we would meet on Lee Road at the Dutch Pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a conference up at a place called Eagle's Nest. And I was sitting listening to someone teach. And I was daydreaming, not listening at all to what they were saying. And on my notepad, I drew a picture of Steve Martin with the little arrow going through his head. Remember he used to do that thing? And for some reason, I can't remember how, that picture, maybe I drew a picture of a fish. I don't know. Somehow or another, that's the genesis. And I began writing, I don't want to be a selfishy. And then I thought, fishy, so a cell, a single cell. You know, and it's a play on words, which of course you know.
Obviously.
I'm selfish,
right.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Playing on unselfishness and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And so I just began writing it. In that moment when I was doing the wrong thing, you know, I should have been listening and paying attention.
But you're right. You're thinking about selfishy and the idea of a picture of a single-celled fish in the big sea comes out and we have a song.
Yep. And this is this song. And when I perform it live or back when I used to perform it more often, it would be a long playing album, whole mm-hmm. story. I would take everybody and make them pretend that they're on a cruise ship and, you know, and look over the side and what do you see? And, you know, take people on this visual excursion, if you will. And then it would lead into the selfish.
Now, there's one thing that you also did back then that I have to remind you, you would have people snap their fingers.
Oh, yes.
And then you would tell them,
They don't snap them too hard, or you'll get red snappers.
Brum, pum, pum. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay.
The punny in me likes it.
It takes one to know one.
All right, here we go.
Once upon a time, swimming in the sea, a silly little selfish, just as small as he could be. He never saw his brother fishes needing him, you see, 'cause all he ever thought of was just me, me, me. Now I don't wanna be a selfishy, swimming all alone, just my single cell and me. I will give away a part of me, dividing what I am to fill the sea. One day the selfish realized that he was all alone. Other schools of fishes played, but he just stayed at home. The problem with the selfish is they're very hard to see, 'cause selfish is the smallest thing that you can ever be. Oh, I don't wanna be a selfishy, swimming all alone, just my single cell and me. I will give away a part of me, dividing what I am to fill the sea. Now here comes the moral of the story. If you want to grow, then you must decide to give yourself for someone else. Your cell must now divide. You just gotta do it. It does no good to wish, 'cause soon your selfish turns into an unselfish. Oh, I don't wanna be a selfishy. Everyone sing, swimming all alone, just my single cell and me. I will give away a part of me, dividing what I am to fill the sea. Dividing what I am to fill the sea. One more time, dividing what I am to fill the sea.
That is done live right here. That is Selfishy, John C. Morgan. Brother, I love that. And it is so much fun to hear it. It's been years since I've heard all the lyrics one more time like that. It's a great job, man.
One more time? Okay, here we go.
Yeah. No. John Morgan, presidential impersonator. And we have a lot of fun, obviously. And today, I was wanting today, you know, John, there's been so much, I guess, bad news in the world in the last couple of months. I can't think of a period apart from 9/11 in recent memory that we've had more concern, more, I guess you could say, bad news daily. It's on radio news. It's on TV news. Most people I know have made a decision to limit even how much they read about news or watch, because it can be downright depressing. And yet today, this was a day to have a lot of fun, and I appreciate that. But I do believe it is important to draw attention to the fact that you've written a book that really does speak right to this scenario. And it is on the war, it is on fear. Now, President Trump actually came out at one point in one of the task force meetings declared that this is like a war, that what we're fighting right now is no small thing. And I think the more we learn about this in the weeks that's gone on, I had Matt Staver on. There are many sides. You used the word tapestry before. There's a lot of angles. There are a lot of things. There are a lot of problems that are surfacing along just with the coronavirus that's going on right now. And these are times, John, where people are fearful. I know you've seen this, and this book that you wrote, it really came around at a really good time. So when you look back, and I know you've even recently started your own daily Facebook show. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But as you're interfacing with people, starting to get back into conversations as things open up right now, how are you seeing the themes of this book really playing into what you're sharing?
The theme of these times is uncertainty.
Mm.
And uncertainty plagues upon the mind like a locust in an apple orchard, eating away at your peace. And what we need during times like this, the antidote to uncertainty, is certainty. And there's nothing more certain than the Word of God. It seems, Mike, like what's going on is causing people to have their sense of reality or what's normal shaken. And what they're being left with is their actual relationship with God. And, you know, the Pharisaical part of people, the unreal part of people, it's going away.
Mm-hmm.
And so people that only have a pretend relationship with God are much more shaken than those that have a deep relationship with God. Because when you're rooted and grounded in the Creator of all that is, well, He's not changing, and He's not rattled,
right,
and He's not the least bit disturbed by this, because He knew that this day would come before the earth was created. And this may well play into the end days.
I've heard that. I've heard a lot of people that believe that. And what you're saying is that these are shaking times. And I think that people who know the Lord really do have a confidence in Him. And He is the source of their peace. It's not going to be the afternoon or evening news. It's not going to be the confidence that we get from statements by task force members. Because even some of this past week, some of what they've talked about, the virus, has changed. And we find out that, as it is always, John, people who are experts, they don't know everything. And what they think they know sometimes changes. And then you say, if I can't then really feel that I'm putting my trust and my hope and my confidence in what they know, because now they don't know everything they thought they knew, who can I put my trust in? And as believers, we've had that answer all along. We know that there is one who is Jesus, who is worthy of all trust, worthy of all praise. And I think you're exactly right, brother. In a time of shaking, when everything is shaken every which way but loose, there's only one solid rock that we can put our feet upon, and that is the Lord.
To me, that sounds like a perfect recipe for a worldwide revival.
Mm. Now, ironically, there were a lot of people, I don't know if you were one of them or not, but I've had a lot of interviews with a lot of people who, leading up to 2020, and there was something about maybe the year, this particular year, with the dual play of 2020, meaning the year, but also thinking about 2020 vision, exactly, who have had a sense that God is preparing us for that kind of revival. I can remember talking to a couple of pastors in the fall, and they were seeing what other people saying, like, no, I see signs that it's not getting worse. It's actually God's doing something. He's preparing people. He's preparing hearts. And, you know, the kind of preparation that your book talks about, when you talk about overcoming fear, there's only really one way that a believer can overcome fear, and that is to displace that fear with trust in the Lord. And that's what your book is really aiming for, right?
Exactly correct. You know, it's easier to defeat an enemy that you understand. Any football coach watches the film of the team that he's about to face in a game so that he can know their tricks and tips and know their own strategies so that he can work a strategy that can help defeat them. And in the same way, Ephesians chapter 6 teaches us how to conduct spiritual warfare. And for most of my Christian life, Mike, I would read Ephesians chapter 6 like it was a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never knew exactly how, you know, the sword of the Spirit. I mean, it sounds like a C.S. Lewis movie or something, you know. But really, spiritual warfare is meant to be a real thing. We come against the lies of the enemy that cause fear. Fear is a feeling, it's an emotion, and it's also a biological response. I mean, part of fear is simply biology. Dogs and cats, grasshoppers, we all experience fear, and that's not a negative thing. And yet, on the other hand, God says over 300 times in the Word of God to his followers, and that includes us, fear not. Do not be afraid. Trust in God. And so we have a mandate to be fearless. And yet, here we are with this biology that causes us to feel afraid. So what do we do with that? Well, we have to learn where to place it. And as we study the Word of God and learn that God is faithful and that every single thing that comes our way has passed the Father before it's allowed to attack us, God's going to use it in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
He sent the disciples into that storm. Well, they didn't realize, they didn't put two and two together when they were fearing for their lives. And all the more so when he came to walking across the water and they thought he was a ghost. It's like, it's gone from a thriller to a horror movie. You know, what's going on? And then Jesus stepped into the boat. He said, "Peace, be still." He calmed the storm. And they realized more than ever before that he could be trusted and that there was the temptation to fear could be resisted. And just like any temptation, lust, pornography, anything, you defeat it by resisting it, by keeping your mind stayed on the Lord. And these things aren't just pie in the sky, folks. This isn't just the words that the preacher says that you never listen to.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we are to live.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do so, we defeat fear.
I remember the book that we read years ago called The Gospel Primer or Primer, depending on how you pronounce that. The author of that book talked about this very thing, and he said that the best antidote to overcoming anything that has you just believing the worst or seemingly bound to some sin or whatever it is not, it's not just trying harder, it's displacing it with God and becoming more absorbed with God's promises and God's word and remembering what God says. Then, and he says that process pushes out, it displaces the role that once held in our heart, because both of those things can't be there. If we have a heart full of God, which is trusting in God, and we've been in the past fearful, both of those things can't coexist. God does not exist. What fellowship, the Bible says, can light have with darkness? Jesus is light, and that other darkness has to flee when he's there. COVID-19 is not a name that is greater than God. God has given us the spirit of power and love and a sound mind, not a fear. And so that is something that we have to remember. We have to go. I think it is wise. I think churches have been wise to be cautious and to be mindful and to be courteous and to be. But we're coming to that point where people are going to have to step out and trust. And we can't stay fearful. We have to stand and say, you know, God's going to help us through. As we get to these phases, and I'm looking forward, and I'm going to be right there when our church opens back up for public meetings, man, I'm going to be there. It's time that we step out and be full of faith.
And really, Mike, remember back a month or month and a half ago, how much worse the projections were than what actually has played out. I don't know, you know, many people believe that was by design, and I'm not here to speak to that. But what I am here to speak to is God has intervened, and the numbers actually are amazingly less horrific than were predicted. And so as we consider moving forward, please remember the current numbers rather than the former numbers. God's got you in the palm of his hand.
And he's not going to let us go. Hey, man, thank you for being here with me today. Give us the website and your Facebook info for your new show.
Oh, okay. JohnCMorgan.com. And you can go to Facebook.com/Bush Guy.
Bush Guy.
Yeah. Monday through Friday at 5 p.m., kind of like a happy hour. I come on every day and just give a little talk like this on some perspective. Yesterday was on persistence. The day before was on momentum or motivation, that sort of thing.
Well, it's a lot of fun to see you on there. I've been on there a couple of times. John Morgan, my guest today. Friends, thank you for being with me. We'll see you next time on Afternoons with Mike.